What is the future for international affairs under the Trump administration? Just ahead, why professionals here on the First Coast say budget cuts could undermine our national security. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app, listen to us there anytime or on iTunes. You can also stream us live right now on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. And just ahead, is the Trump administration properly funding the State Department so it can effectively deal with world affairs? Experts weigh in just a moment at 549-2937. Then later, it's a powerful performance and it will happen at WJCT. We'll have a preview of this year's coming out monologues. Weekend events from The Spectator also coming up, all of that and more ahead. But first this hour, all eyes are on Capitol Hill this morning because in just under an hour, fired FBI Director James Comey is set to testify on his meetings with President Trump and the investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election and whether members of the president's team colluded with that effort. Now, the Comey drama is sucking up all the oxygen, and it's regrettably taking attention off other critical national security issues. One of them is how we deal with a range of foreign affairs. Now, next year's budget proposal from the White House would cut funding for international affairs by 30%. That's seen as devastating on a number of fronts for national security professionals and the diplomatic corps. They say these severe cuts would undermine national security and skimping on security protections for diplomats and development professionals serving overseas could harm the U.S. in a number of ways. There's a lot to discuss, and we're so pleased to welcome a trio of true experts on this. Here with their insights, we welcome Admiral Jonathan Howe. He's former senior Navy commander as well as former deputy national security advisor. Admiral Howe, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Also in studio, General Buster Hagenbeck. He was first commander in Afghanistan and later superintendent at West Point. Good morning.
Good morning.
And rounding out our trio, retired diplomat John Caulfield. He served in many countries for the State Department and in Washington before his final post in Havana, Cuba. John, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
And these gentlemen all reside on the First Coast as they give their thoughts. What are your thoughts about the president's proposed budget and the 30% cut for international affairs? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can weigh in as well on our Facebook page, where we're streaming this show live right now. Admiral Howe, let's begin with you. Of course, the president proposes and the Congress disposes. These cuts may not make their way through the process. Still, the three of you felt compelled to speak out as a group this morning. What are your biggest concerns about these proposed cuts?
Well, I think we have to understand for international affairs to work in the world, and it's really, when you talk about diplomacy, you're talking about the management of relations with countries, a huge job and very complex today, as we know, with the Korean issue and ISIS and the Middle East is always a problem, whether you have ISIS or not. But we, and Russia, you know, we could go on and on and name a string of things that are being managed. On the soft side, on the peace side, you have to have a strong State Department, frankly, and diplomats are the front end of that, dealing with countries all over the world. In my experience over time, you know, we have all these negotiations over arms and commerce and all sorts of things. So it really is important in maintaining peace. And frankly, if you get in a war, you need the State Department to help you get out of it.
Right.
If there can be a negotiated settlement, et cetera. So it's really critical to have that expertise. And I've had the pleasure, I was several years in the State Department, worked in the White House a number of times on national security things, the Pentagon. And it's that expertise that comes from the State Department people. And we have them staffing things like the NSA as well, because they know their countries, they know the culture. They know the ins and outs, and they handle hundreds of small things that never get to the White House level, mm-hmm. but are terrifically important for our commerce and for our engagement with the world. And so I think this boils down a little bit as, are we going to be a leader in the world or not? To me, I think that's an important yes, we should be. And you can't do it if you don't have the skills that come out of the State Department and the diplomatic service.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. In a moment, we'll hear from our diplomat, John Caulfield, long career with the State Department. First, though, General Hagenbeck, do you agree with Admiral Howe? Do these proposed cuts harm national security as the former commander in Afghanistan?
I think these cuts would be devastating, not just to the State Department, but to the country. I mean, these are the people, as the Admiral mentioned, that do the day-to-day hard work in each of the countries that we're engaged with. They understand the culture, the language, the leaders, and the behind-scenes things that go on that most of us don't have any idea about. And so the face of America ought not to be the soldier with a gun. It ought to be that diplomat and that aid worker that's overseas and only worry about the military response in the most extreme cases. And I would echo the Admiral's comments that the strategic question that needs to be asked is, what's America's role in the world and what kind of nation do we seek to be?
And John Caulfield, the Trump administration has worked hard to recast our role in the world with a strong position of America first. That's the tagline that we hear from the White House. What about the cuts in terms of seeing them through that prism, and why do you disagree?
Well, the budget cuts are for the foreign affairs budget as a whole, which includes not just the State Department, but also the things like the Peace Corps, the Agency for National Development, and that they're quite severe. They're the second most severe in the entire federal government. The budget went from about $55 billion a year to $38 billion a year, and that's about almost a third cut. And it's going to have implications for the ability to represent U.S. interests overseas. I also think that people are not aware today that our diplomats, our Foreign Service officers, and our military officers are really part of the same team. And it's essential that we have all the teammates on that team to accomplish our goals.
Lindsey Graham, a Republican senator from South Carolina, has said that skimping on security protections for diplomats, development professionals serving overseas would pave the way for what he has called a lot of Benghazis, people being put in harm's way, civilians serving our interests overseas. Admiral Howe, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's right. We have to have the expertise. We have to have it in the field, and it has to be protected.
And General, clearly both the diplomatic corps, retired military brass, they're making their feelings known about this. So how do you see these proposed cuts working their way through the process?
Well, I hope they don't come about. I hope that we have allies in Congress that restore these proposed cuts right now. I've been to about 80 countries in the world, and I can tell you every time that I went in as a military representative of the country, the first folks that we went to were the ambassadors and to the embassies in those countries, and we leaned on them pretty hard, and they made us look awfully smart most of the time.
Now, of course, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, all eyes are on fired FBI Director Comey's testimony. We're going to carry that live at 10 o'clock here on 89.9. Do you have concerns at all that other vital issues are not getting the attention they need, like this, for example, because there's so much attention and focus on the FBI investigation, the House and Senate investigations into the Russia probe?
I'm concerned about it. We've been down this road before. At the end of the Cold War, we made some cuts that we came to regret in many, many different ways across the world. And I just don't want to see a repeat of that.
All right, let's go to your calls as we talk about these proposed cuts for international affairs. What do you think? 549-2937. Robert is in Ponte Vedra. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Good morning.
Hey, go ahead.
We have, good morning. We have $20 trillion in debt, and the debt continues to grow, and nobody wants cuts. But if you need to face reality, when you have a growing federal deficit and growing debt, nobody wants cuts, but Donald Trump at least is realistic. and maybe 30% is a high number, and everybody wants to protect their pet projects, I understand, but you need to cut, and I understand what these gentlemen are saying, but they need to face reality as well.
Okay, yeah, thank you, Robert. What about that argument? And let's be clear, the Trump budget proposes pretty severe cuts for a lot of other programs and causes, not just this one. John Caulfield, what about that argument?
Well, the foreign affairs budget in its entirety is less than 1 cent of your tax dollars. So that even if you eliminated every dollar spent on foreign operations, that it really wouldn't make that dent on the budget. On the other hand, although this is a relatively small part of the federal budget, it has direct implications for our role in the world. And as the president has increased his defense funding, it's difficult to understand why he cut the foreign affairs funding, which goes in tandem with that.
This, you see this, Admiral Howe, is part of defense funding.
Absolutely. I mean, it's national security, really, as we look at it. State has a big role, has a seat at the table, so to speak, has a voice that is important, and it has to be operating throughout the world effectively.
What are some worst-case scenarios, General, that you envision if these are approved?
Well, my concern is not just the dollars, which we're all concerned about, but ultimately the intangibles. The State Department, much like the military, you have to grow your own. You don't create them overnight. So when you make these cuts, you're talking personnel cuts. We're going to have folks that we're not going to bring into the pipeline today to learn the language, the culture, and grow through the system to be the experts. And in a time of crisis, they will not be there. And we've experienced that in the military. When 9/11 happened, all the services had cut back dramatically, and we suffered in many ways.
And how did the diplomatic corps deal with that? John Caulfield, and if these 30% cuts are approved, how will your colleagues in the State Department, you're retired from the State Department, but how will this affect their jobs?
Well, in the very direct ways, it means that we will have fewer personnel, we have less training, and as General Hagenbeck was saying, that, you know, to get an officer to learn a difficult language like Arabic or Chinese, they spend 2 years out of the early part of their career just dedicated to learning that language and then are expected to serve in those areas. So if you eliminate, say, intake as a result of cutbacks in personnel, this is a loss you're never going to make up.
549-2937. Let's go to Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I was just, I wanted to mention the Benghazi, which always was already brought up. I mean, it's such a furor in the campaign, and now we're cutting the budget for the State Department, which will, of course, affect security. And also point out that our myopia extends to Trump's policy of getting rid of all existing ambassadors and then being slow to appoint their replacements. Our foreign policy is really struggling at this moment. I pray that we may find some solution soon.
Okay, thank you for that. And he gets at a somewhat related issue in that the administration has hundreds of unfilled positions, sub-cabinet level positions, other federal agency positions. These are folks that, you know, they keep the trains running on time across the federal government. That's a separate issue, honestly, from what you gentlemen are here to talk about. But does that concern you?
Yeah, it certainly does to me, because having been with administrations trying to get started, you've got to get these billets filled, people that are on the team, so to speak, and ready to play. And you have to have it down through the bureaucracy, which is very big. And there could be some cuts there, not necessarily in the State Department, but as was mentioned before. But I think that it is critical to get manned. And what I wish is that, I don't care whether it's Democrats or Republicans, but blocking everything that Trump's trying to do does not help our country. And we really all have to. Thinking people have to pitch in and join in, and let's give them a chance to be successful. It's our country that counts.
And create solutions. General.
No, I concur with that wholeheartedly. I've been in the Pentagon 4 times and on 2 occasions with a change of administration. Sometimes administrations come in and it's like a hostile takeover. and they get rid of a lot of people before they've identified who the replacements are. And so you have professional bureaucrats trying to run the day-to-day business there, but you don't have the oversight and the strategic view of whatever the administration may want to go down that road.
549-2937, what are your thoughts about this? Jason is in San Marco. Hey, Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Once again, it's a pleasure to be able to share my opinion on your show.
Thanks.
I totally agree with your in-house guests. And to propose that we balance the budget by cutting our State Department is, that's preposterous and it's absurd. And I'm sad you had a caller who called in and thought that that was making the tough decision. If you want to find a little money extra for the State Department, how about we trim President Trump's personal travel budget back and forth to Mar-a-Lago and to his golf course in New Jersey and the security for his wife and son to stay in New York? I think those are much better sources to balance the budget than trimming our State Department. Anyway, that's my opinion, and thank you for letting me share it with you.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Clearly, people see these budget decisions through a very partisan lens. John Caulfield.
And in a way, that's unfortunate because our foreign policy should not be partisan. Most areas of foreign policy, in my career of 40 years, our basic interests have not changed dramatically from one administration to another. And I've worked with Republican and Democratic administrations. There are obviously certain policy differences, but for the most part, the U.S. interests are the same, and we need to keep supporting that.
Can any of you remember a cut this severe being proposed in your careers?
Not for the State Department, certainly.
No, mm-hmm. No. Okay.
I would just like to mention, I mean, that comes to mind is this very traditional thing that Vandenberg, I think, first said, that politics stop at the water's edge. Mm-hmm. And I just wish we could get back to that because politics should fall away when we're talking about our protection of our whole country and our international relations and what everybody has to think as an American citizen. What is the best for our country going ahead? And by the way, you mentioned America first. Yes, it's okay. America can be first. We always have to protect our interests, but that doesn't mean that we can't be supportive of other things and that we're going to be totally isolationist. We can't operate in the world today, which is so complex and needs the United States, frankly, to be a solid member of the international community, and we are, of course, in so many ways.
And that's a consensus view, General, that Admiral Howe just expressed, that's been the consensus view among professionals of your caliber for about the last 70 years. This administration has proposed a radical departure from that worldview, particularly White House advisor Steve Bannon, who has said he wants to deconstruct the administrative state. And I think you have to look at these proposed cuts through that strategic imperative. And clearly you all see that as of deep concern.
It is of deep concern. It's of some of this began really under the last administration when we began to withdraw in certain kinds of ways, and you saw the response from countries like Russia as they got involved in taking over Crimea, the fight in Ukraine, and now their involvement in Syria. I'm on a group out of Harvard that meets with them about every 7 or 8 months overseas, and we've been doing this since the spring of 2011, and they're quite candid with us about where they see holes in our foreign policy and how they intend to take advantage of those kinds of things. And now, with the new administration, we may have created some more gaps. And if we go down this road cutting the State Department, I'm not sure where it's going to end.
549-2937. Michael is in San Marco. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
My main comment would be is, you know, these cuts, not only the State Department, which is, you know, extremely important. Our Foreign Service does a great service for this country and for other countries. But, and it's, you know, this budget cut as well as the claim for our rebuilding our infrastructure through private equity and $200 billion, they harken back to these times that, oh, when we built the interstate system, when we built our Foreign Service up after the war. These were times when our tax basis was much broader because we had our tax rates were much higher, and it's time we're going to have to all pay for this because it is an important part for our country, not only our infrastructure to help us internally, but also externally with our Foreign Service.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Michael. And here's a comment on our First Coast Connect Facebook page from Janice. Cuts to the State Department. That's penny wise, but pound foolish. Without adequate communication, you will have more disputes and possible wars, which will cost more in lives and money. Here's an email from Ed. One of the things that irks us average Americans is when they see nations that we provide millions or even billions for, both government and private funds, and these nations badmouth us and vote against us in international forums after they take our money. John Caulfield.
Well, I wish that I could promise everyone that every time I went into a foreign government and asked them to do something that that we wanted, they would say yes immediately. The world doesn't work like that. It doesn't work in our domestic politics. It doesn't work in international politics. But having people on the ground gives us an advantage because we know what's important to those foreign leaders. We know the pressures on them, and we know the best arguments to make.
We're so pleased and privileged to have the three of you who operated at the highest levels of government and the military to live here on the First Coast so you can give us your thoughts on the air to all of our listeners. It's such a wonderful public service that we can provide. Are you making your feelings known beyond First Coast Connect? General?
Yeah, I am. I have let it be known in Washington, D.C., where I go occasionally, and as I mentioned, this group that I work with out of Harvard, we report to the interagency. That's the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, as well as our intelligence agencies. And we pass along this kind of information. And we also talk to them about our adversaries, like the Russians. And the reason that we meet so frequently is that we're trying to prevent the next catastrophe, if you will. Much the way that World War I began, we're trying to create protocols that will not cause that to happen.
And I deliberately didn't bring up Russia during this discussion so we could keep the focus on your overriding concern. But this does tie in some respects, to our relationship with Russia, right?
Well, yes, of course, that's always in the picture. And we always have, certainly from a military and a State Department, national security standpoint, Russia is very important. I was just going to put in a plug for the World Affairs Council, which Buster will be the chairman of soon. And really, one of the things that we've tried to focus on is the role that the U.S. should play in the world. And I don't think in the we hoped maybe in the campaign we'd have a great dialogue, and I don't think we did. We just had a lot of name-calling on both sides and didn't get down to a very serious look. I don't have any objection to a serious look of what we're doing. And there's certainly pros and cons on both sides. But my bias right now is that America is has to be strong throughout the world and to be a stable, dependable state with our values.
We're having a world-class discussion right now. We're so pleased to have on the show this morning Admiral Jonathan Howe, former senior Navy commander, as well as former Deputy National Security Advisor, General Buster Hagenbeck. He was first commander in Afghanistan and later superintendent at West Point, and retired diplomat John Caulfield, a very illustrious career with the State Department. Lots of calls for these gentlemen. Let's go to Conrad in Arlington. Go ahead, Conrad. You're on the air.
I just wanted to ask if there was any update on the situation with it was in front of one of the new major news organs yesterday, I believe it was, about Nancy Soderbergh being caught in the police lockdown of Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, and they were being held for some period of time for their own safety or something. And then it didn't. I don't think it went into any detail about whether or not they had been released.
Yeah, and I do believe they were all released later that evening, Conrad, but you're right. That was covered yesterday.
Yeah, okay. Since she's been part of your program before, I just wanted to ask about that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Great program today. Great program.
Thank you, yeah. But yeah, that was interesting to see. A former ambassador, I believe all of you gentlemen know her.
Of course.
Was in Paris and was stuck inside the Notre Dame Cathedral by the authorities, and because it wasn't a safe situation for a little bit. What do you think, as retired brass and diplomats, you know, this growing concern that many Americans have about traveling in Western countries, like France, like England, like, you know, a lot of European countries? They're worried about it. Admiral Howe.
Yeah, well, I think they should be. I mean, you can't ever have 100%. But right now, you have to look very carefully. And actually, the State Department is a big help in that, in terms of the embassies. Right. And they know where it's safe in a country and where it's not, or where the probabilities are less likely. And this is a time for a lot of caution, unfortunately. I love traveling, and and our people going out and our students and so forth and learning abroad. But we have to be very, very, very careful.
And as he mentioned, John Caulfield, our embassies are critical.
Well, certainly, you know, many of my experiences in the State Department were as a consular officer, where we are assisting Americans who are victims. And I arrived in London in 2005, just as the bombs had gone off on the London transportation system, in which an American was killed and some others were injured. So one of our key roles as Foreign Service officers is to support Americans abroad.
Let's take one more call. It's Jen in Fruit Cove. Hey, Jen. Good morning.
Thanks so much. So my question for this group of variety and experienced folks is, our current president is an excellent promoter and marketer and everything in between. Is this 30% a reality? Do you feel like our, you know, senators and Congress would look at this differently? And it kind of feels like when you go to a restaurant and they give you a, you know, 30-minute wait time, but it's only a 10-minute wait time, so you feel good. Are we looking more at a 10% cut when all of this lays out?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Thanks for that. Yeah, thank you, Jen. General.
We have our fingers crossed that it's just a proposal and that our congressmen and the people in the legislature will think this through and reverse most of the cuts.
Both our senators from Florida, Senator Nelson, Senator Rubio, have spoken out forcefully saying it's really important to continue to support our foreign affairs budget. And we're going to be trying to see members of the Northeast Florida congressional delegation to make the same case.
We appreciate you joining us with your thoughts. Pleased to have you all in studio together. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Admiral Jonathan Howe, General Buster Hagenbeck, and John Caulfield, formerly with the State Department, all in studio. Much more still ahead later. The Spectator with a packed events calendar for your weekend. But up next, WJCT hosts The Coming Out Monologues, a preview of this powerful performance, back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. We're back this weekend for a live broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion from the Fitzgerald Theater. Our guests include Josh Ritter, John Batiste, and comedian Emma Willman, plus the Royal Academy of Radio Actors, and Sarah Jarosz and Aoife O'Donovan will join us. You'll have the Song of the Week, of course, our Powder Milk Instant Song Request, and more, all right here.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Back in March, James Comey revealed the FBI was investigating potential links between the Trump campaign and Russia.
This will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed.
It wasn't long before President Trump fired him. Now, all eyes will be back on Comey when he appears in the Senate. I'm Robert Siegel. Complete analysis this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, the Saudi woman who led the movement demanding women's right to drive. In 2011, Manal al-Sharif filmed herself driving and posted it on YouTube. She was arrested. After expressions of outrage from around the world, she was released. Now she's written a memoir about the denial of women's rights in Saudi Arabia. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, they are powerful, real-life and on-stage stories of what can often be a painful personal journey. The Coming Out Monologues is set for next weekend here at WJCT Studios. This annual event features local people in our community telling their coming out stories, along with straight allies who are part of this. Coming Out Monologues creator Tina Vaughn and cast member Adam Davis are here with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tina, this is happening next weekend at WJCT. It won't be the first time, though, for the Coming Out Monologues. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of this?
Absolutely. This is our sixth year in the community. Each year, we reach out to our community and collect the stories of LGBT folks and our allies. And we have story coaches who work with them so that we can present the stories in a theatrical setting. And all of the proceeds that we raise from this project are donated to Jasmine and PFLAG.
How did you come up with the idea for those?
This is actually based on work that was already being done in California. University of California at Riverside was doing a Coming Out Monologues each year in the college to benefit their LGBT Resource Center. Texas A&M was another example of a similar project. And so when we started this back in 2011 was our first meeting, we decided that maybe we'd be the first to host something like this community-wide.
And what is it about this type of performance, do you think, that is so impactful?
I think what makes this impactful is that it provides an opportunity for folks who might believe they have nothing in common to find these points of connection and understanding, opportunities for understanding. Because at the end of the day, if we have an agenda, that's it. To radicalize storytelling as a means to connect people and change hearts and minds.
Now, one of your cast members is Adam Davis. He's a straight ally in this show. Adam, how did you get involved in all this?
Well, I've had the pleasure of knowing Tina for a couple of years now, and she invited me to participate a little more than 6 months ago. And when she did, I just thought it was an amazing opportunity. It wasn't something I was expecting, but as soon as she mentioned it and I thought about it, it was definitely something that I wanted to be a part of.
And in your monologue, you talk about a journey, I guess, you've made in your life. Is that right?
Absolutely. So, when she asked me to participate, I had to think about what was my message, what did I want to talk about. And for me, the most honest and truthful message is really not just talking about all the beliefs I have now about LGBT rights and advocacy, but truly giving a more full-bodied picture of where I've been my entire life.
Because you didn't always have those beliefs?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
I think a lot of us have a journey, and my journey has been one where I was not always advocating for rights. I was not always as open-minded as I am now. And I thought it was important to maybe share that message, because I know that there are a lot of other people out there who are at different places in that same journey.
And you have a portion of your monologue we're going to listen to.
I do.
All right. Here he is, Adam Davis, cast member of the Coming Out Monologues.
I was raised in a world of traditional masculinity. We camped. We fished. We hunted. We chopped wood. From my perspective, gay didn't really exist in our family. For one thing, most of our family had military ties, and there weren't any gay people in the military, right? And we were a Midwest family. Gay was for New York. Gay was for L.A. or Paris. There were no gay people in Grand Rapids, Michigan, right? As I grew up, I became fluent in all the traditional gay hate speech. Amongst my friends, there was no greater pejorative than to even imply that a man might be gay. And my definition of lesbian was any woman who wouldn't sleep with me. Because, of course, if a woman doesn't want to get with all of this, then she must obviously be gay, right? So, in hindsight, there's really no way to sugarcoat this. I was a bigot.
Was that hard for you to write?
I don't know if hard is the right term. I definitely went over the words many times because I wanted to be as truthful and honest about it as I could be.
Cathartic, to say those words?
Great choice of terms. Yes, yes.
What changed your perspective on all this, if you were brought up this way?
I talk about in the monologue how I'd love to say that, I had some epiphany that I woke up one morning and said, this is the truth. But the simple fact is that sometimes, even though I'd like to say that you can see someone's rights and how they should have equality without even having met a lot of these people, unfortunately, sometimes you do need to make friends and meet people in the community. And my story is thus that through a family member that I'm very close to that came out, my uncle, also a number of friends, and just the growing number of people I've met and been involved with as friends and colleagues and coworkers who are in the LGBT community, mm-hmm. over time, slowly, it just became obvious that these views that I had in the past are untenable and really needed some daylight.
Tina, this is one cast member's personal story, Adam's story, but there will be other people on stage as well.
Absolutely. And I think I'm most excited about our two young girls who are joining us this year. We have a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old. We're really running the spectrum of the diversity that is in our community. So this is an exciting year.
Sixth annual, and this will be not this weekend, but next weekend at WJCT on June 16th and 17th. How can people get their tickets?
They can get their tickets at the door or at com2017.eventbrite.com.
Tina Vaughn is the creator of the Coming Out Monologues, cast member Adam Davis also joining us. Thank you guys so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
We'll be right back.
Do you ever wonder about that moment when two people click?
I don't think that there's anything that really feels better than that.
In that moment, what exactly is it that clicks?
What clicks? And if we can know what clicks, can we learn how to make it click more?
This week on Radiolab, stories of soulmates, particles colliding, and the desperate search for symmetry.
Saturdays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Next time on The World, protecting America's shores. Members of the U.S. Coast Guard have 95,000 miles of coastline to protect, and they have to be ready for anything.
We have mounted automatic weapons on our vessels. That deters a lot of threats, I believe.
We ride along with the Coast Guard and update all the news on the next edition of The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
D-Day was June 6, 1944. C-Day is June 8, 2017.
What message do you have to Jim Comey ahead of his testimony?
I wish him luck.
Former FBI director, now private citizen, James Comey publicly testifies before the Senate. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
In the woods of northern Minnesota, there's a magical place, a land where humans and bears are friends.
I could lay down and the cubs would climb over me.
But to some residents, that reality is a nightmare.
People have trained them to come up to a body and make contact. I'm not okay with that.
This week, Invisibilia explores what happens when two realities collide.
Sundays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, organists from across the Southeast are coming to town next week. Husband and wife organist Peter and Patricia DeWitt are here with a preview of something unique as the Jacksonville chapter of the American Guild of Organists hosts the 2017 Southeast Regional AGO Convention. Hey, guys. Good morning, DeWitts.
Good morning.
Good morning. To see you. Organ music is just so grand and operatic, and it's so magnificent. Like, this is just so interesting to all of us here at 89.9. Let's begin with you, Peter. What is this AGO convention all about? What does AGO stand for?
American Guild of Organists. And it's founded actually in the late 19th century. So we've been around a while. And what's going to be happening here is that we'll be showcasing Jacksonville and Jacksonville organists and performers to the Southeast. And then we're inviting people from as far away as Spain through across the country to come and play on our instruments.
Workshops.
And they're very excited about doing that.
So performances, workshops, master classes. Patricia, this is a goldmine for anyone who loves the organ.
Yes, and we'd like for the public to come to as much as they can. We have a series of concerts in the evening that they can come to, the climaxing at the Jacoby Hall, where they're going to hear the organ that you just heard on the break.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do you both love this instrument, and how long have you been playing it?
Well, she started on earlier in her life than I did. I started in college, actually, but I loved it since I was a child in church, so it just took me a while to get to it.
Yeah, we all think of it as church music, but it goes beyond that, doesn't it?
Well, obviously, we have an instrument in the symphony concert hall, and we're going to feature that. Mm-hmm. And that might be interesting if you've gone to the concert and you've seen this huge mass of pipes there and wondered just exactly what is that about. If you'd like to hear them do something other than rumble in the bass for the orchestra, you should come to Christopher Houlihan's recital on Wednesday night.
Yeah, so there's going to be a number of performances, correct?
Yes, ma'am, over the city.
All over the city. Yes, so this, there are a lot of moving parts to this, just like the organ itself, right?
Yes, I mean, ma'am,
this is a big deal.
Two of our recitals are actually in St. Augustine.
How did this all come together, and how did Jacksonville get chosen as the site for those?
Well, they asked us if we would be willing to take up the slack. This takes place every 2 years. The last time it took place in Jacksonville was in 1963.
Get out of here.
Yes, ma'am. I'm not going to ask you when you were born, but one of our family persons said he was born that year.
I was born very shortly after that. So, man, this is exciting. Patricia, are you and Peter going to be performing?
No. I'm giving a workshop on organs in Spanish Florida, which I've been working hard on, but it's very difficult to find information. But I'm going to do the best I can to entertain people.
Very nice.
She will be actually singing, and I will be playing a little bit on that program. So that's not entirely true that she says no.
All right. Well, and at the closing concert at Jacoby Hall, this is a pretty neat lineup. The Jacksonville Children's Chorus, the Jacksonville Symphony Chorus, St. John's Episcopal Cathedral, Immaculate Conception Basilica, the Episcopal Church of the Good Shepherd, Riverside Episcopal, Hendricks Avenue Baptist, St. Augustine Cathedral and Basilica, and Memorial Presbyterian Church, St. Augustine. They'll all be performing.
Those organs will all be being played
those
by many different people.
That is going to be pretty majestic.
Yes, ma'am. It certainly will be.
Now, how can people find out about these events and mark their calendars?
Well, there actually is a website, agojax2017.com. And you go there and you click on program info. And you can see the entire program.
There you go. They are husband and wife organists Peter and Patricia DeWitt. Thanks for making great music, and thanks for being with us. Have fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's coming up June 11th through the 14th. In a moment, The Spectator with some other ideas for this weekend. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. We're back this weekend for a live broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion from the Fitzgerald Theater. Our guests include Josh Ritter, John Batiste, and comedian Emma Willman, plus the Royal Academy of Radio Actors, and Sarah Jarosz and Aoife O'Donovan will join us. You'll have the Song of the Week, of course, our Powder Milk Instant Song Request, and more, all right here.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Back in March, James Comey revealed the FBI was investigating potential links between the Trump campaign and Russia.
This will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed.
It wasn't long before President Trump fired him. Now, all eyes will be back on Comey when he appears in the Senate. I'm Robert Siegel. Complete analysis this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, the Saudi woman who led the movement demanding women's right to drive. In 2011, Manal al-Sharif filmed herself driving and posted it on YouTube. She was arrested. After expressions of outrage from around the world, she was released. Now she's written a memoir about the denial of women's rights in Saudi Arabia. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
There are vacancies, sure, but the news is making hiring pretty tough in political Washington.
You're going to be less likely to, you know, want to work 80 hours a week because you're just not sure where the whole thing is going.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Help Wanted at the White House and beyond. Next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Today's segment with Carrie Speckman is brought to you in part by Blue Bamboo Asian Kitchen.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, from Tignataro to Tears for Fears, lots of ideas out there for your weekend.
So glad we made it. So sad they had to pay.
Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the Tears for Fears super fan, Carrie Speckman. Yay! Is here today. And it is well known
we just stop, like,
that you
stop and you just keep playing. playing?
Yeah, I know. We'll play it again. But it is well known that you are a big fan of Tears for Fears, and they are coming to town at the New Daily's Place.
Right across the street. Yes, they are, on Saturday at 8 p.m. They're also going to be in Orlando tomorrow, where I'm going to that, too.
Now, you got front row tickets to this?
To this one.
Soiree?
I'm in a second row tomorrow.
Second row. What, you couldn't get the first row?
Saturday.
The spectator didn't score front row seats?
Spectator gets you nothing. Money. Money is what talks.
That's right. Money talks. Well, now, when is Tears for Fears?
That is Friday.
Friday night.
I mean, I'm sorry, Saturday.
Saturday night.
8 p.m. Daily's Place.
Daily's Place. And did you go to the other Daily's Place show?
No, I'm so excited.
So this is your first trip out to Daily's Place.
I hope I don't explode.
You know, it looks great. And as I drive by every day, you know, it was amazing how they pulled that together at the last minute for the opening concert. And big opening with Tedeschi trucks.
Yep.
Yeah, it's looking good.
I've heard great things about it.
All right, so that's Saturday night. Now, tonight, Tig Notaro, she is hysterical.
I have seen her twice, I think.
And she's coming tonight to the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall.
And I am very sad that I will be hosting trivia at European Street.
Yes, she is hilarious.
I know, so she's going to be there. She has a show that's on an Amazon show called One Mississippi. She's been nominated for a Grammy and Emmy. She's been on Jim Gaffigan Show, Sarah Silverman, all kinds of shows. Super funny, very dry.
Yeah, very dry humor.
Yes.
Really, really talented. I love her. She's tonight at Ponte Vedra Concert Hall. Tig Notaro. On a completely different note,
yes.
Friday night at 927 Events, it's Medium in the Raw Live Roar Tour.
That sounds a little strange. In the Raw.
But she's a medium.
She's on that show, works with Local Haunts, the one
yes.
that is. And she's a medium. And this is a fundraiser for ROAR, R-O-A-R, which is an organization of women dedicated to protecting their children from drug abuse.
She's going to do live psychic readings.
Yes. I think there's only 90 spots available, but she'll do it like in a group setting.
I already knew that. See, I already knew that there were only 90 spots available. You know how I knew that? I'm psychic. No, I knew that
because... She's not psychic. She's a medium. Clearly, you don't know the difference.
So she communicates with those who've passed on.
Correct.
That's the main thing, right?
Correct.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So you don't know. You go there and you don't know. She doesn't know who she's going to hear from or speak to.
Yeah,
or...
you don't know who can come through.
Correct.
All right. So that's Friday night, 927 Events, medium Pamela Teresa. Okay. Let's listen to a little bit of this incredible show. God, this has been around for a while. It's Thoroughly Modern Millie. This is a classic.
I won't ask you if you were born when it came out, but...
Well, it was 1967 when the movie came out. And
no comment.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's listen to Thoroughly Modern Millie. I thought there would be singing, but that's okay. Julie Andrews played Millie in the movie.
I did not know that.
Yes, and it's a 6-time Tony Award-winning Broadway show about the Jazz Age.
Here's a fun fact.
A flapper named Millie.
My grandmother's name was Millie.
No way.
Way.
Was she a flapper in the Jazz Age? Because I see that about you. Like, I totally could see that.
And my cat's middle name is Mildred.
Well, it's Thoroughly Modern Millie at Theater Jacksonville, opening night. Friday night. And props to Theater Jacksonville, the oldest community theater in Florida. Yes. Still doing amazing shows.
And they have shows the 15th through the 18th, also on the 22nd through the 25th. This is just opening night, so there are other opportunities.
Okay. A couple of other news and notes. Saturday night, it's the Florida Spirits and Cocktail Festival in Hemming Park.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday, a Tony Awards viewing party at Sunray Cinema. The Tonys are on Sunday night.
They are, hosted by Kevin Spacey.
Very cool. Very
and cool. I just have to say, I'm really pulling for a great Groundhog Day, the musical. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Wait a minute.
Groundhog Day, the musical
on Broadway?
Yeah, not only on Broadway, nominated for a Tony.
Do you have any idea how important that movie is to me? It's very important
to me.
How
can it not be?
That is one of my all-time favorites.
Me too. You know what? Let's just book a trip right now to Broadway.
Yeah, I think we need to do this.
And go down the old White Way. Is that what they call it?
The Great White
Way. Great White Way.
Who plays Phil Connors in this production?
Neil Knows Ned. Watch that last step. It's a Dahoozy.
Ned Ryerson. Okay. Sunday, it's solid life advice, better living through comedy. What's
Speaking
that all about?
Of comedy, we should just do our own comedy show.
Yeah. All right, what's this all about?
It is local comedians they're standing out to prove that laughter really is the best medicine, Melissa. And they put it like they're sharing their tortured souls. That's what they're saying. But it's kind of people talking about, similar to when I did that, This Is Your Brave. They're talking about their own personal experiences, but making them funny. And it is a fundraiser for the local mental health advocacy group,
Stronger Than Stigma. Okay, that's great. And that is Sunday at Nighthawks. And then also at Daly's Place Sunday, Third Eye Blind.
Correct.
And last but not least, the Shrimp play tonight, the Sharks play Saturday.
That is correct.
And Carrie Speckman will be seen at Daly's Place Saturday night. In Section 4.
Section 4, A, Row A, Seat 3.
You know, we always play Tears for Fears on election night. Did you know that?
No, yeah, I didn't.
Because everybody wants to rule the world.
I don't. But
it's our election night theme song.
I didn't know.
So
that.
We should play it again.
Yes, you should.
How about that? Just for
play
you.
Play it again.
Just for you, Spectator. Go to thespectator.com.
Kevin's like, no, don't play it again.
For
don't
all weekend it. Events. Oh, we don't have it? Oh, well. Well, always.
Way to tease me.
Always
Thanks.
Good to see you. We'll close with her Thoroughly Modern Millie. How about that?
That's fine.
Yeah, I think that is what he asked. That's our show today. Thanks to
all
of our guests
Kevin,
and callers. He is the unimpeachable Kevin Murchart, the producer of this program, the talented and lively Ryan Bank is running the board today. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Up next, live coverage of former FBI Director Jim Comey's testimony to the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee. You can catch that live here on NPR. I'm Melissa Ross, and this has been First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Everything today makes yesterday slow. Better face reality. It's not insanity, says Vanity Fair. In fact, it's stylish to raise your skirts and bob your hair. In a rumble seat, the world is so cozy. If the boy is kissable and that tango dance they wouldn't allow. Now it's quite permissible. Goodbye, good booty girl. I'm changing and how. So beat the drums, cause here comes Carolee Moore.